Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Dracena Wines Podcast. I had the pleasure of once again heading into New York City for a tasting event. New York Drinks New York was held at the Altman Building on West 18th Street. It was a more intimate setting than the events held at the IAC Building, but alas, there was still quite a bit of background noise. First world wine problems. While you're listening, if you could please go to your phone and swipe all the way down to where you can leave a review. Please don't do this if you are driving. You can always do it later. And leave us a review so that others can find us and so we know how we are doing. Thanks so much. Enjoy. Okay, so I am here at the Altman Building in New York City on West 18th Street, and I have stopped off. My first table is Pleasant Valley Wine Company, and I am here with Patrick Doyle. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm Pleasant Valley is the oldest winery in the Finger Lakes, one of the oldest in the country and one of the oldest in the Finger Lakes. We were formed in 1860. We specialize in champagne, sparkling wines, and desserts, but we do a lot of other stuff. We do a lot of contract work for other companies, and our facility is in Hammondsport in the Finger Lakes. It's a beautiful old place. We've got 8 buildings in the National Register of Historic Places, and we've come to this event for New York Drinks New York. I think it's been like 8 years in a row, and we love this event. It's a great way to meet people in New York and expose our products to the market.
So which of the Finger Lakes are you at?
We're on Cuca Lake. Okay. So Cuca Lake is sort of next to Seneca Lake. So Hammondsport's at the bottom of Cuca Lake. It's a beautiful lake, right in the heart of the Finger Lakes region.
Okay. So I see here that we have 3 different sparklings. Is that your whole profile of sparkling, or is that all you have with us today?
We bring 5 wines to this thing. That's what they tell us we can do. So it's not our whole portfolio, but Great Western is one of the great American sparklers. It goes back to the 1800s. It's been around for a long time. It's been in our family for 40 years. We've been selling it for a long time. And today we brought our sparkling rosé, which is brand new. Just introduced it within the last 6 months. It's 100% mostly Chardonnay. It's pretty dry, and it's been doing very well. We've got a whole new package for it, and we're very excited about its potential.
Excellent. And then we have, so tell us about the Great Western. What's the story behind Great Western?
So Great Western, we started making Great Western in the 1870s, and in the early part of the 1900s, it was one of the top sparklers in the United States, and it's been strong for 150 years. We bought the brand from Constellation a few years ago, and they've been great partners. We're excited to have the brand back in the family, and we've been working hard to get it out there and let people know that it's around and it's alive and it's doing really well. There were some people that thought that it may have gone away for a while, but it never really did. It's just we're trying to bring it back to where it was years ago. It's a great, well-priced, fabulous product. So
what is your total case production?
Well, we don't like to talk about that, but we're in the hundreds of thousands of cases. So we produce a lot of our own products, but we also do contract bottling and storing for a number of other companies around the East and around the country. So we try to help our customers with whatever projects they may have. So it's a lot of fun.
So my next question is, we have in the Finger Lakes, it's a beautiful, beautiful area. Okay. So can you do weddings at your facility? Do you have events at your facility?
We do some limited events at the facility. It's a little tricky just because it just depends on what people are looking for. But we have a great tour. I mean, we really encourage people to visit, especially during the months from Memorial Day to September or October. We have tours on most days, and you get to go up into the old buildings. We have 26 caves, and they were carved into the side of the hill by these folks, a long time ago, and there really, there really isn't anything like this place anywhere, especially in the East. It's really a special facility. It's been in our family for about 40 years, so it's fun. It's cool.
Well, that's a lot of caves. That is a lot of caves. All right, so what brought me over here, the first thing that caught my eye was this chocolate lab, a beautiful label with the most adorable puppy face ever on the label. So tell us about this wine, how the name came by, what's going on, and I'm guessing there's a puppy at home.
Well, we have dogs. We don't have a chocolate lab, but our winemaker came up with this some years ago, Shirley Hill. She's phenomenal, and She put this blend together, and there's a lot of chocolate wines out there. I think this one is really very special. It's a Concord base with chocolate in it, and it really, really goes well. It's a nice dessert, anytime kind of a wine. We sell a ton of it all over the place, and you just have to try it. Even if you don't like chocolate, you just have to try it. It's really good stuff. And the chocolate isn't overpowering. It's just a really nice, drinkable bottle of wine. So we're very happy with it. It does very well. It still does really well.
And my last thing is just tell people where they can find you on social media.
Sure. So we're on Facebook. I think it's Pleasant Valley Wines. You can search for us or whatever. We're on Twitter and Instagram. Same handles. You can find us. And we just launched a new website, which we think is pretty cool. We think it does a better job of explaining the company, explaining our lines of business and what we do. So, and I mean, the best thing to do is forget about the virtual stuff. Come to the facility. You need to come. And Hammondsport's a fabulous place. It tied for the coolest small town in America a few years ago, and it's a great place to visit. There's the Curtis Museum and a bunch of other really, really amazing wineries, great restaurants, and it's a great place to come in the summertime.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Patrick. White Cliff Vineyard, and they participated in last year's Cab Franc Day, so I of course had to stop by and see them. And today I am with Tristan Iliori, and he is going to discuss, first off, the first thing that caught my eye was Hungarian oak. So why Hungarian oak?
The main point is it's just a lot cheaper. So it's really about like a quarter of the price of a French oak barrel. French oak barrels, depends on where you're getting from, the ballpark is usually around like $1,500 per barrel, and that's only new for the first time you're using it, and then it becomes neutral and you could basically using whatever you want. So the Hungarian oak is usually, and again, depends on where you're buying, we usually buy Kandar, which is central Hungary, where they actually do the cooperage. I don't know where all the oaks are coming to. Usually around $500. It's a huge, huge difference in price point. And then for consumers, like a regular wine drinker is not going to know the difference between French and Hungarian. There is a substantial difference in European versus American that I think even like somebody who's casual in wine would be able to detect. But for us, it's price point, and it has a lot of the same characteristics as French oak. And that's just the bottom line for us. We have to make it affordable.
Well, you know what? If you making it affordable, it makes your overall wine more affordable for the consumer. And I think it brings a lot of nice enhancements to it. It's different, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's very nice, very classy. I still get the vanilla that you get in that. So I've got to bring up the Trap Neck. Tell us about the grape, because it was designed specifically, right, for the Hudson Valley or New York?
Designed for cold weather climates in general, but it is a New York varietal. Cornell Agricultural School is working on the hybridization process. It's based on Gewurztraminer, but there's more than a dozen varietals in the hybridization process. And that doesn't mean like genetic modification. I guess in the crudest sense, it is. It's just taking cuttings, allowing the cuttings to grow together. Dominant genetic traits come through. But Gewurztraminer is the base grape, and that's where the name comes from. So Traminette, Gewurztraminer. It's borrowing from the suffix there. And it is one of the most interesting, I think, like New York varietals that Cornell Agricultural School is working on. So we have some of the oldest Chaminade grapes. We have friends at the Agricultural School, and we've been planting it as long as we've been able to. And it's one that I think is pretty cool. You know, it's a very quirky grape. It's got that really strong lychee and a lot of grapefruit. People can do it dry, you can do it sweet. Ours is like right in the middle, so it's fruity but not super sweet.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the grape itself? Early, late?
In terms of harvest?
Yes.
So in terms of harvest, you can, depends on, again, what you're aiming for with it. So you can do an earlier harvest with it. You're going to be higher acidity, a lot more grapefruit going on that way. We usually do it pretty average, you know, so it's going to be more like late August, early September that we're harvesting it. So, like, mid-harvest. It's not neither early nor late for us, and that's the way that we do our Chaminade. But again, as with anything, but especially with a newer varietal, people are still figuring out what they want to do.
So, next, gotta bring up the Cab Franc. Okay, so tell us about your Cab Franc. How many acres you've got planted, how many case productions, things like that.
Sure, so we, for the Cab Franc, we do it on both of our vineyards. So we have two vineyards. One's our home vineyard, which is at our site in New Paltz, just outside New Paltz, and then one in Hudson, New York. We planted a bunch of more Cab Franc there. It's another 10-acre site. We have, including both sites, about 35 acres total. And I couldn't tell you exactly how much of that's Cab Franc. Probably around four, maybe a little less. Maybe a little more, but I'm not the vineyard manager, so I don't know the total acreage. But our Cab Franc, we usually do two vintages in the year. So we do one that's New York, meaning it's grapes from Long Island, grapes from other parts of the Hudson Valley, and some of ours. And then we do one that's all estate too, because we grow a lot of it, and we like whenever we can using just our grapes for something. So for some of the Cab Franc that we're big proponents of, we always do one.
And it does get blended into quite a bit of your other varieties.
Yeah, so we do a couple blends that have Cab Franc in it. We have a rosé that you tried today that has Cab Franc in it. We do a blend called Two Cabs, which is obviously Cab Franc Cabernet Sauvignon. And we do our big Bordeaux blend, which is called the Sky Island, which has Cabernet Franc in there as well. So all those feature it, and then we have the single varietal Cab Francs too. So that's a substantial portion of our red list. There's 8 wines on our red list right now. That's half of them.
Yeah. I like to hear that.
Yeah.
Lastly, can you tell them how they can find you on social media,
sure.
What your website is?
Yeah. It's wycliffewine.com is the website. Our Facebook page is just Wycliffe Vineyard, and the Instagram page is Wycliffe Wine as well. It's easy to remember, same as the website. And our web store is always up to date, and you can get more information on the website too.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So next up, I'm at the Brotherhood Winery table, and I am with Tracy Garrison. And I've noticed for the first time that now there are two separate labels. We have a Brotherhood label and a New York Icon label. So if you can tell us a little bit about the differences between those two labels.
Certainly. The Icon label is from when the grape pickers pick the grapes off the vine, and the grapes taste a little bit differently. Those are so-called specialty grapes. They put those to the side, and then the winemaker comes in and he picks each grape for that actual bottle. So we have an Icon Riesling, we have an Icon Merlot, we have an Icon Cabernet Sauvignon.
Excellent. And Brotherhood is the oldest winery in not just New York, correct? It's the oldest running winery?
It's the oldest working winery in the United States of America. It was founded in 1839 by the local deacon that was making wine for the two churches in Washingtonville, New York, which is by West Point. The reason why it's called the oldest working winery is because during Prohibition, we were allowed to continue the wine because it was for the local churches. So we have not stopped production, and it is the oldest working winery in the United States of America. It still is to this day.
excellent. And my last question is, just can we tell us how the people can find Brotherhood Winery? First, you said you were located near West Point. Okay. So from New York City, how far of a drive is that?
It's about 55 minutes. It's by Woodbury Common, by West Point. And you can find the wine if you go to brotherhood.com. All of the events, we open back up from mid-April to mid-December, and there's events. There's the stomping of the grapes. There's a big roast. There's a Renaissance fair. There's a beer and craft event. They have all kinds of fun events that go on during the season. And then you can come up during the weekends and see bands and go down and see all the accoutrements that they just restored in the basement of the winery from 1839. So it's a really lovely day, and you have fun just going on the ground. The grounds are beautiful. We do weddings all the time.
Okay. And lastly, social media?
Yes, social media as well. Absolutely.
How do they find you?
They find you on Facebook, on Twitter, and Instagram.
Okay, at Brotherhood Winery.
BrotherhoodWinery.com.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I am with Kristen Bradley of Brooklyn Enology, and it's a very interesting label and very unique look on the label. So I'm very curious if you can tell us about the name and the history of the winery.
Brooklyn Enology, because it's the first urban winery in Brooklyn, so it's an homage to Brooklyn in that direction.
So where are you actually located in Brooklyn?
We're located in the North Fork of Long Island, and the tasting room is located in South Hole, and that's where all the wine is made. All the grapes are sourced between North Fork, Long Island, and the Finger Lakes region. Everything in New York, everything's
in New York. And you had poured for me the 2014 Social Club White, which has a lot of stuff going on. So why don't you tell us about that wine itself?
There's a lot going on. It's a Chardonnay that is sourced out of the North Fork and is aged in oak. And then the other six varietals are sourced out of the Finger Lakes and aged separately in stainless steel and then blended. So there's Gewurztraminer, Riesling, Pinot Gris, Vidoc Blanc, and Viognier.
And was that field blended, or was it in? Did they blend it in the winery, or did they blend it out at the field?
It is. So everything is fermented separately.
Okay.
Stainless steel tanks. There's one wine that we're pouring that's actually fermented in barrel. But for that particular wine, everything is fermented separately, and then our winemaker, Ellie Schaefer, develops the blend in the lab, kind of tests around which works best depending on how the fermentation has culminated. So with that being said, it's blended after, which means it's a lot more space, a lot more tanks, a lot more hands-on. But she, our winemaker, was in her previous life an engineer. She went to Cornell for engineering, and she's very scientific in her process, but also it's very balanced with kind of being attuned with the grapes and the harvest and kind of finding that perfect niche. I'd also like to mention that the woman you were just speaking with was Kristen, and she is part of our wine club. She is our biggest fan, and basically a testament of how, while we do make wine, we also do make family, and we're all about being closely knit with the people that appreciate our wine, and being part of making wine in New York, but also being based in Brooklyn. It's about the community that Brooklyn is, and the community that is the wine region, kind of integrating those together. So I just want to point out that woman that you just heard is Kristen, and she's also an animal.
That is fantastic. That's fantastic. Now, so as the founder of Cap Franc Day, I got to go to the Cap Franc Rosé. Can you tell us about that?
The Cap Franc Rosé is a blend. So it is 89% Cap Franc and 11% Syrah. And it's unique from the other rosés that have been done under the BOE label, because they've all been 100% Cap Franc. This one is different because it does have that Syrah blend in it. So it's lending a little bit of a peppery finish, and it's just a little bit more unique than the others that Ali's done in the past.
And how long has BOE been a winery?
Almost
12 years now. We celebrated our 10-year anniversary, which kind of led into the expansion of the brands and the introduction of As If, as well as now Haywater Cove and Salford selling all of our sister wineries that have now developed under the BOV label. I'd also like to mention, in regard to the Cabernet Franc Rosé, it is a natural ferment, which is really fun. So Allie really does like to play with being hands-off, and for that particular fermentation, the indigenous yeast on the skins are what developed that particular wine, so it's really truly really great. We do use commercial yeast. So the process on the Cabernet Franc Rosé is really interesting because it is a natural ferment in the sense that there's no commercial yeast added to the tank. So the indigenous yeast on the skins are what develop the result of the fermentation. But there are some aspects that Allie does jump in and kind of like listen to what the grapes need. But the yeast, nothing is added in that particular part of the process.
Thanks for speaking. Excellent. And my last question is, tell us how people can find you. What's your website, where you are on social media?
Absolutely. So BOE is a, I say BOE, it's a lot of syllables. The BOE is definitely in an interesting, kind of malleable, new wave kind of system right now, in the sense that we're really all over the place. Our home is Brooklyn. I am working out of Greenpoint, this beautiful building on Western Grand on the water. Our tasting room is called Braconic Cellar Door, which is in Southfold, like we mentioned before. But we are found in different wine stores. We're all over the city. We are found trying to be more integrated into the arts. All of our labels feature Brooklyn artists, and so we've been fortunate enough to sponsor the Brick Jazz Festival, the Bushwick Film Festival, been a part of events at Silent Barn as well as Flux Factory, kind of going through the whole artist route. So in that sense, we don't have a tasting room in Brooklyn, but we're in all of these different events that, can help be used by wine, really cool things, which is sort of what Brooklyn Knowledge is all about, being everywhere. So in that sense, if you're really looking for one spot to find us, you can find us online, brooklynenology.com. We do have an online store as well. If you want to find a home to go taste all of the wine and even meet the winemaker who is there behind the table pouring, go to Braconic Cellar Door, which is braconiccellardoor.com, and come by and visit the tasting room.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So I am here with Robin Ross, owner of Arrowhead Spring Vineyards. And first of all, can you tell us about the name itself?
Sure. On our site up in the Niagara Escarpment, there's actually an ancient Indian tool-making site that we found out about after we bought the property. So back in the 70s or 80s, when Route 93, which is the road on which our winery is, was put in by the state, they actually had to have a site dig done, and the Department of Archaeology at the University of Buffalo came out, and several feet, I want to say it was 10 or 12 feet underneath the top layer of soil, there was quite a concentration of chert points, and also they found the remains, the charred remains of a fire circle, so it was carbon dated to something like 2000 BC. The Arrowhead portion of our name is in honor of that site that's on the land.
Wow, and that was completely shocking to you? How did you find your property?
So I knew when we were looking for property that we wanted something in the Niagara Escarpment area. It was my husband and I looking for land together. We knew that would be a great place to grow grapes because right across the border in Canada, they were having wonderful success in the region. And it's, the grape growing region knows no political boundary. So we were looking for land in that area. And we did not know about the site and the land. Apparently at one time there had been a small sign talking about it and honoring the site. But according to the professor that I talked to at the University of Buffalo, there was a problem with people seeing the sign and then getting out and being their own archaeologists and digging holes next to it. It was causing some trouble, so they eventually took the sign down. So I didn't learn about it until I went to get a building permit, and the town was concerned like perhaps we couldn't build there. Of course, that wasn't the case. We weren't going to disturb the site, and it was out near the road anyway. So all that got straightened out, and we were able to build, and now we have a winery there.
Excellent. And when did you purchase this?
We purchased the land late in 2004. And then we licensed in 2005, and we started bringing grapes from other farms. Then in 2006, on Mother's Day, we planted the first 8,000 vines at our winery. And now, all these years later, we're still going strong.
Excellent. And if you, so I'm seeing a Riesling, a Pinot, a Red Blend, a Reserve,
Meritublet.
Meritublet, and then a Cool Terroir, so, which is another red wine blend. Of these, do you have a flagship? Which one was, let's go this, what was your first wine when you first produced?
So when we first opened, it was kind of a funny story. We came out with three different wines. We had a red blend we called Apogee, our Arrowhead Red, and a Riesling. The Apogee, we soon learned, was a trademark name, so that was a big oops. So we've never produced a wine called Apogee again, but that became the Meritage Reserve. Now we produce the Meritage Reserve. So both the Meritage Reserve and our Arrowhead Red are focused on Cab Franc, Merlot, and Cabernet Sauvignon. But there's a little bit difference. The Arrowhead Red is a more fruit-forward style of that blend, and then the Reserve Meritage is a little bit more integrated, tannin, more complexity in it. Generally, those barrels are aged longer, 24 months as opposed to 18 months. And we choose the particular barrels for the wine at an assemblage meeting when we're ready to get the vintage into bottle.
Excellent. And are you using American oak, French oak, Hungarian oak, all of the above?
Yes, all of the above. And we've done some experimentation to see which wines do best in which barrels. And we really like the Cabernet Franc and the Cabernet Sauvignon out of American oak. That's not to say that some of it doesn't go into French oak, but in blind tastings, we learned early on that those oaks worked very well with Cabernet Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon.
So as, you know, we are producers of Cab Franc and founders of Cab Franc Day, I automatically go to Cab Franc. What clones do you have? Do you have just a single clone? Do you have multiple clones? Are they blend? You know, are you blending them together?
We do have three different clones of Cab Franc that we grow, and I grow three clones of Cabernet Franc, though. We grow four of Pinot Noir. We grow, we did start out with two different clones of Syrah. Now we're down to one. So on most of the varieties that we grow several clones.
So tell us about the climate in your area, because you are pretty darn north, right? So what is the climate like?
So we're an interesting microclimate, and we're only about maybe between 8 and 10 miles off Lake Ontario, which is a very large freshwater lake. It's about 30 miles across in our area. It's about 600 feet deep, and it's several hundred miles long. So that body of water never freezes. We're the second warmest growing region, actually, in New York State, even though we're more northern than some. And it's because of that body of water, and then the escarpment that's where we're sitting. So what ends up happening is the lake absorbs heat energy from the sun all summer long, and then in the winter it's released and it keeps the area just a few degrees warmer, which allows the vinifera to thrive over the winter. And then in the spring, the escarpment district where we are actually has spring bud break about 2 or 3 weeks earlier than up near the lake, where by the same effect the lake water keeps it a little bit cooler there. It's a frost protection down by the lake for the vineyards that are down there. And up on the escarpment, we have so much wind movement that it's our protection from frost. So it's a nice place to grow grapes.
Right. And do you have a big diurnal shift during the growing season, or is it pretty constant temperature all day long?
Well, it's really with climate change, it's a bit unpredictable. But most of our summer temperatures are around, like, say, I want to say in a typical year, the daytime temperatures might be between, say, 72 and 82. However, we've had extremes where the heat's been as high as 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and in the winter we've dropped as low as minus 10 Fahrenheit in our vineyard, which was a little bit of a shock to me. I really thought that when I planted the vines, we don't normally get those low temperatures. I was told when I purchased the plants, they're good till about minus 5 Fahrenheit. So, of course, that year I was a little bit concerned, but we had gone into a complete dormancy at that point. There was quite a bit of snow coverage in the vineyard, and we didn't lose vines. Less than 2%, and when we did lose vines, it was in the Merlot, which is known to be a little bit less cold hardy than the others. But overall, I was pleased with how the vines did.
Oh, that's excellent. So you don't do anything special for your area, like the digging, burying them in the stone or anything? You don't need to do that in your area?
No, when we first started, when the vineyard was young, I used to do the hilling and de-hilling. So in this process, we throw a lot of soil up around the bottom so that we protect the graft. And the idea is that if the vine freezes, it'll be above the graft, and even though you won't get a vine that year, the following year you'll have buds and have a vine again. But I found that I was losing a lot of vines to tractor blight. That's when I was taking the layer of soil back, I'd occasionally Vic a vine, and that was causing a problem. So in the end, we end up with crown gall or something and lose the vine anyway. So looking at the numbers that I was taking out with what I call tracker blight, we decided not to kill anymore. So with the newest vineyards we put in, we don't even kill them when they're young anymore. We just let them go, and I've found that I have a lot better survival rate that way. And we have quite rocky soil, so it's very easy when you're pulling equipment through the vineyard to hit a big chunk of granite, and it'll just toss the tractor around. And even though we rock pick every year, I often joke that if we didn't raise grapes, we could certainly be a quarry.
That's a lot of work right there. That is a lot of work. So tell us, how can people find you? Tell us where you are on social media, what your website is, and that type of stuff.
So the website is arrowheadspring.com. We're on Facebook. We are sometimes on Twitter and Instagram. I have to admit we don't post there as often probably as we should. But if you find us on our website, you can actually get our wines right through the online store. We ship to several states now. And, of course, you can visit the winery. We're in Lockport, New York. It's close to Niagara Falls in Buffalo for a frame of reference for people that aren't familiar with Lockport. And we're in several stores in the Buffalo-Niagara region.